Now we're getting the dirty details. Now it's all coming out in the wash. What actually happened between Jerry Jones, Micah Parsons, all parties involved. Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. We're getting everything now, Pearl. Everyone's laying their cards. Well, everyone's trying to spin their story.
We're getting versions. It's like when I talk to my 13-year-old and 14-year-old kids, I get a version of what really happened. Are we really getting the dirty laundry? Are we getting rationalizations and excuses and Cowboys spin? Are we getting caught up in the Cowboys vortex, Maggie?
Well, too late. We're already there, but the Cowboys vortex sounds like hell on earth, quite frankly. But
that's a good fantasy football name.
But, you know, it sounds like when the toilet spins down, you know, hopefully not for the Cowboys fans, it's not that bad, but I have a feeling it's going to be. And the latest is like this big ESPN story that dropped yesterday that kind of goes through the TikTok and the blow-by-blow of everything that happened. It kind of makes both parties look bad. To me, it makes both parties look like outright liars. And I think that the ESPN story tried to do a good job, Pearl, of balancing. They make it seem like, yeah, Jerry Jones, you know, wanted the meeting with Micah Parsons, but it did go into contract talks. Micah was cool with that. So cool that, in fact, that once he and Jerry split up in that meeting, now this now infamous meeting in March, where they were supposed to talk about leadership, they end up talking about contract, then Micah circled back to Stephen Jones later that day to ask for more money. And according to the story, Stephen Jones said, yes, they'd sweeten the pot. And then Micah's agents came in and said, no, we've got to start from scratch. Or this is actually the floor now where we're starting, what you just said to Micah. And the Cowboys balked at that. And now we're getting into bad practice habits and character assassinations and the whole deal. Here's the bottom line on all of this. This is the Cowboys season. So I'm sorry for our fans in Dallas and outside of Dallas and America's team. This is the season when America's team becomes America's punchline. And for real, full stop. And this is going to be the shadow that lingers over the whole season. To me, this is very much, I know it's not exactly the same, but feels very much like Saquon Barkley leaving the Giants, going to the Philadelphia Eagles. If your worst case scenario happens where the Green Bay Packers are even in the NFC Championship game, Super Bowl, let alone win the Super Bowl, it just drives the knife in and twists it so much deeper. And this is the Cowboys season. There's almost nothing they can do that's not going to make this the year you traded away Micah Parsons.
Yeah, but it's a little different, though. Saquon Barkley got $12 million a year. Micah Parsons got like 48 or something.
But if they win, who cares?
Well, actually, it turns out to be a little less because of the extension. I think the narrative is much different already than Saquon. Saquon was sort of an afterthought last year, right? He didn't get paid a lot because he's a running back. I think there are people who are looking at the Micah Parsons deal, and I think a lot of people, neutral observers, think the Cowboys won this deal now. Everything has changed in a week, and it has nothing to do with the practice habits or all that.
Yeah.
When the back report came out, and that it was said that he had to take an injection before their week one game, and he's getting all this money, I think people are looking at it like, whoa, the Packers took on a lot here. Salary cap is screwed forever on a guy who might have a back issue.
Okay,
that is to me what I'm hearing a little more of than the Cowboys traded away Saquon. Then again, we might have said the same thing about the Giants coming into week one last year.
This is Cowboys spin because, first of all, the salary cap, for the most part, is a figment of our imagination. It keeps going up and up and up. And clearly the Cowboys, you know, they have the money now that they did not give to Micah Parsons. They're so focused on stopping the run, they gave Deron Bland, the cornerback, $90 million, right? So the idea that this is all still the same, it's all just the spin. Everyone got into their feelings, especially Jerry. They tried to be the smartest people in the room, and they're going to end up screwing themselves. Because here's the richest part about this. I love that Micah Parsons is basically in traction, right? But Matthew Stafford, who's a decade older, is going to get an epidural, and people think the Rams are a Super Bowl contender. Like, he's going to manage the pain. Like, Micah Parsons has missed 5 games in his entire career. Like, this is not going to be the Packers aren't that stupid.
You think everybody's picking the Rams to the Super Bowl? The people jumping off, they almost had to have a public announcement. Be careful jumping off the Rams bandwagon because of Matthew Stafford's back. And you know that's true.
Everybody
on earth has jumped off that bandwagon. And Micah, it's not that dissimilar. A back is a back, Maggie. The thing is, we know Jerry was right about one thing. Micah is a light defensive end. I mean, that's just a reality of the situation. You saw him out there in the Packers uniform. He kind of looked like a safety. I mean, he's small. So You got, when Bryce Young came in the draft, you said, I don't know, that guy's too small for his position.
Yeah.
So you're telling me you don't have any nerves about Micah Parsons holding up?
No, because even if he is smaller, I love that now it's changed into he's some kind of bum who was also always terrible at football, and how did we ever even get here? I think what pendulum has swung too far on the other end because he got paid, and we always do this because we have set in our mind how much a guy is worth. And then when you actually see the numbers, yeah, they're eye-popping. It's weird. It's monopoly money. It's abstract. I can't have fathomed someone writing me a check for $47 million. It's never going to happen in my life. But let's not pretend that Micah Parsons is not a good player or that the Packers are so wildly over their skis here. I think that the Packers understand exactly what they're doing, saw an opportunity, came in and said, 2 first-round picks and pay the guy, and we'll have him for the next 4 or 5 years. We will do that 100 times out of 100.
Well, here's the thing. I mean,
they already paid their quarterback. It's not like Jordan Love is cheap.
You're saying the salary cap's not real, but now they have one of the most expensive quarterbacks, one of the most expensive, actually two of the most expensive pass rushers. They paid Rashawn Gary, I think. So, I mean, like the formula of you have a cheap quarterback and you build around him and you win, like the Packers are moving farther and further away from it. Now, basically, they have all their eggs in the basket at the top with two players, really three players. This is risky. I mean, let's face it. Jordan Love is another guy who, coming off an injury, they are really, really all in contract-wise on Micah Parsons. I don't think every team would do that. Honestly, I think that it's probably more polarizing than we thought. Forget the trade competition. Forget the picks. I think there are a lot of teams who would not have paid Micah Parsons that much money. I think that's a reality.
888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. Then why even have a front office? Like, why even have the draft?
That's exactly why you have a front office, so you can manage the cap.
You pat yourself on the back because you actually draft Micah Parsons and he becomes what you hope he becomes, which is one of the best players at his position to even be in the conversation to be the highest paid. And by the way, the reason how you know this is all absolute BS is because Jerry thought they had a deal. The whole stopping the run stuff is just the explanation after the fact. They're just trying to explain what they did and try to get Cowboy fans on their side and try to salvage this in some way by saying, stopping the run, stopping the run, stopping the run. They thought they had a deal in place with Micah Parsons. They thought this thing was just needed to be rubber stamped. I will never believe, and this new article from ESPN even further drives the point home, that, and Diana Rossini, who joined us yesterday, even more further drove the point home, the NFL insider for The Athletic, that Jerry had no interest in trading Micah Parsons before the draft in March. She said 2 weeks ago, there were people in the front office of the Cowboys, 2 weeks ago, who had to get Jerry in a room and say, Jerry, you really have to look at possible draft or trade compensation and trade packages, because Jerry was still so hell-bent on getting a deal done.
Yeah, but I have to ask you this, Maggie. Did the number get out of control a little bit? I mean, why is Micah Parsons getting so much more than Myles Garrett and T.J. Watt?
The Dak Prescott number got out of control. Receiver numbers are out of control. It's like, what are you going to do?
You've said many times the Dak Prescott contract was a mistake.
It is, but to me, if you knew you had to pay Dak, C.D., and Micah Parsons, you've known this for years. To me, I would have paid Dak and Micah. I would not have paid C.D. Lamb.
Oh. Well, if they didn't pay C.D. Lamb, you know what I said, like, pack up the bags, don't even play a season, because what is the Cowboys offense without CeeDee Lamb? Name their second most dangerous player.
Well, George Pickens now, but I think that this is where you earn your stripes as a GM. Yeah. You cannot pay everybody. And for me, quarterback, as much as I'm not a Dak believer at this point with all his injuries and stuff, but you go quarterback and pass rusher. To me, I'm more on the Andrew Perloff idea about this when it comes to wide receivers.
Yeah, but
you said wide receivers, the new running back.
Now I'm changing because Howie changed the formula because he paid his receivers.
He did, and he finds a way to pay everybody, though. He's the gold standard. He's paying pass rushers. He's paying quarterbacks. He's paying receivers. He's paying running backs. He's almost paying he's paying offensive linemen at the top of the market.
Well, he's let guys walk. I mean, he let Milton Williams walk this year. He let Javon Hargrave walk. It seems like he's letting defensive tackles walk. That might be coincidence. But he's letting defensive linemen walk. I don't know. It's not one size fits all.
They're drafting everyone from Georgia to replace them.
Well, that's the thing. Now there's super pressure on Green Bay because of their cap. They, you know, first contract quarterback situation, they're the opposite. Like, they need to hit on everything now. They are super invested in this. So they're a little bit, I would say, like, they're on a razor's edge, right? If Micah gets a nick or if Jordan Love's knee gives out again, or his hand, he just had a hand surgery,
yeah,
like they're dead in the water because there's no way they can build depth. They don't have, now they gave up two first round picks and all their money is going to these two guys and also with Gary, so three guys. It's, I don't know. I don't think it's so clear cut. I think Jerry might have tripped into an okay situation here. Here, but let me ask you this question. The Eagles play the Cowboys on Thursday night.
Yeah, tomorrow.
It's eight and a half point spread. You got it at 7.
Yeah.
What is the one fear you have if you're a Cowboys fan facing the Philadelphia Eagles? The first thing on your mind, what are you afraid of?
You're going to get blown out.
But how?
Oh, Saquon.
You're going to get run all over. So that thing about the Cowboys stopping the run, that's a legit issue.
Okay, well, you want to know what? They call it complimentary football for a reason. You know what I'm saying? Like, you also can't have the offense also has to be able to keep pace so that you can not only put points on the board so you're not getting boat raced and blown out, you got to have an answer. You got to have a response. And there have been times when Dak Prescott is either not on the field enough for the offense to be potent, or they don't have a run game themselves. See, this is the thing about the Cowboys. They love talking about, we got to stop the run. How about you run the ball? You keep telling us years and years, we're going to run the ball, we're going to run the ball. Who's the running backs now?
Exactly. They have the guy, Javonte Williams from North Carolina.
Javonte Williams, talk about injuries. I mean, they're hoping Jaden Blue. They got Miles Sanders.
By who's hurt too, but.
Yeah, Miles Sanders, Saquon's former backup. I mean, it's just...
But they do have the linemen. I'll give you that.
Okay, great. So they had the linemen last year.
Well, you know? there's one more narrative that the Cowboys are putting out there. I heard Albert Breer voice it multiple times yesterday on big shows, on DP show for one, that they want to change the culture and build this good guy culture. And Kenny Clark from Green Bay is supposed to be one of the good guys in the league. Sure. I get that. That's a legit... Yeah. Team building strategy.
And I laughed.
But the Eagles have a lot of good guys, but they have Jalen Carter, who is... famously came with massive character issues. And then we were in the Eagles hotel and you could get a vibe that everybody on the Eagles was afraid of Jalen Carter. you need a Charles Haley type. That's the other thing. Charles Haley. We had this documentary about the Cowboys trading for the pass rusher to win a bunch of Super Bowls. Now they're trading away the pass rusher to a rival. So it's funny that the 90s Cowboys are doing the exact opposite. They're like, let's bring in a bunch of good guys now and win. I'm like, did you see the documentary? They had a bunch of crazy people winning Super Bowls in the 90s. Go that direction.
Did I talk to Michael?
Micah.
888-710-4ISN. 888-710-4476. The bottom line on this is there's going to be drips and drabs of this that come out, I feel like, for the rest of our lives. Because, first of all, that's how big of a trade it was. You know, we're still talking about the Herschel Walker trade, which Jerry brought up in the first 5 minutes of his press conference because of how impactful it was, how it set up the Cowboys dynasty. We're going to talk about the Luka trade for a long, long time. Just these big moments, it's really hard for a season to take on any other kind of personality once you do something like this close to the year.
Yeah, I feel like this could be closer to the Khalil Mack trade. I don't think it'll be the Saquon Barkley trade. I think it'll be closer to the Khalil Mack trade when he went from the Raiders to the Bears.
See, I don't, because the Packers, where Micah Parsons landed, they're a legit Super Bowl contender. So Khalil Mack went from one team to another team, really get a lot closer. This could be the finishing piece for Green Bay.
But it might not be.
That's true.
I think this is Eagles fan hopeful that it is not. I think maybe that was wishful thinking that it is not the story of the year.
Can I hear cut 17, please, just quickly? So Jerry Jones is going to be on Good Morning America today. That's where the football fans are. GMA.
I don't know his name.
Oh, sure.
Great.
is that Strahan's show? I don't even care to keep track.
It is Strahan's for a while.
I don't know. I thought he left. Is he still there?
He might have left.
He's leaving. But, you know, GMA, that's the hardcore football audience you want to reach. No, I'm just saying, like, that's a morning show for housewives and...
Michael Strahan, the Giants defender?
Anyway, David Mulugeta, the Micah Parsons agent, was on First Take yesterday. So both sides are trying to get their version of the story out there. This is one thing I'm actually surprised that he said, considering Parsons is now on the Packers. You've turned the page. It should all be about moving forward. But David Mulugeta said Parsons always wanted to be a Cowboy.
I think the most important thing is that Michael wanted to be a Cowboy, right? You know, he grew up cheering for the Cowboys, you know, wore the blue and white at Penn State, wore it in the NFL with the Dallas Cowboys. He wanted to be a Cowboy. We did everything we could for him to remain a Cowboy. We reached out, and like you said, I don't really do these interviews. We try to keep the negotiations out of the media. But in this case, so much information has been put out there that we wanted to just address a couple of things. But as far as Michael is concerned, he wanted to be a Cowboy. We did everything we could. And sometimes you got to be a little careful with what you read in the media as far as what was offered to Micah.
Okay.
That sounds accurate. Fair.
Yeah, no, that one will back him up on. But these numbers are crazy sometimes. But to say that was like the last thing he kind of said in the interview, Micah always wanted to be a Cowboy. Now, if I'm Green Bay fan, I'm like, well
yeah,
but let's leave that in the rear view.
Well, I saw the documentary about Micah's life, and he was very adamant about it. Like, he burst into tears when the Cowboys picked him. He said before the draft, I'm dying to be a Cowboy. So that's all true. But he wore that Packers-colored sweater and looked awesome, though. Seems like all the Instagram videos, he has transitioned very well. He's expressing a lot of excitement to be in Green Bay. Like, he seems thrilled to get out of there.
He should be. He just got a lot closer to a Super Bowl.
Well, you bring up a good point, though. He did leave the team that he always wanted to be. By the way, if you want to see a contrast in styles, Jerry Jones talking gibberish and David Mulugeta getting on camera and just being so rational. I'm like, I understand why the Cowboys don't put Jerry Jones in the same room with David Mulugeta. That should be a policy for life. Like, he will wrap Jerry around his finger.
888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. Let's go to the phones. Why not? Early, often. You guys want to talk about this? Let's do it. JK is in Fort Worth. JK, what do you see in this Micah Parsons trade?
Yeah, I called in a couple of days ago. I told y'all, the fans in Dallas-Fort Worth, we are not Michael Parsons fans like that. And you're probably right. Jerry bagged into a lucky deal. It's a old saying, don't throw good money at bad money. Just because he messed up and signed Dak and CD to all that money don't mean he's supposed to pay Michael that much money. And y'all keep comparing him to Khalil Mack. Khalil Mack was a complete linebacker. Micah is an undersized defensive end. It's two big differences in situations. Way around.
Can I ask you this question? So you never – could I go back to your friends, your coworkers, and say, hey, did JK always think that Micah Parsons was a bum? And they'd say yes? Like, did you think that then?
I'm not saying he's a bum. Okay. I'm not saying he's not a good pass rusher. But he's not a complete player. And when you pay a person that much money, you have to have a complete player. It's no way in between it. You locking up a lot of money towards the salary cap. Yeah. And I understand you saying the salary cap is fake numbers, yeah. But we have a lot of players that are coming up for contract. And if we sign him to that much money, we'll be letting other role players go. And we still got a whole team we got to build. Before the Michael Parsons thing even came up, people were speaking about Green Bay as a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah.
That's good for Green Bay. The Cowboys are nowhere close to being a Super Bowl contender.
Right.
A high-priced defensive end is a luxury.
I got to be honest, and I get what you're talking about, and you're making a lot of sense. But you're talking about, you know, whose fault is it that the Cowboys are not close to a Super Bowl contender? Is it Micah Parsons' fault, or is it the front office, Jerry Jones specifically, yeah, that every single move has led to this, which is a crisis?
Yeah.
That you have to trade away what role players. We're talking about a superstar in Micah Parsons. The Micah Parsons slander has gotten too out of control.
All those old moves, that's sunk cost, Maggie. You got to focus on the now. That does just be Dak's overpaid doesn't mean that. Who cares? This is about the Micah Parsons. By the way, JK, I think, was the first person who made me realize, whoa, people do not mind Micah leaving. And now it's become an avalanche ever since then. There's been so many takes. I think the sea change has been that people think, oh, Green Bay is taking on a big risk here with how much money it is.
Corey, also in Dallas, says, I'm looking at the situation all wrong. Corey, what am I getting wrong about this?
I feel like you keep moving the goalposts as far as, like, Micah Parsons getting paid. Jerry Jones probably did have a deal with him. You know, y'all know Jerry Jones don't mind paying people that's been hurt. And it might be something wrong with Michael Parsons' back, but he didn't feel comfortable paying them the whole 47 so he could build, you know, like pay Tyler Smith and De'Ron Bland, guys that deserve to be paid also.
Well, De'Ron Bland's not going to help you stop the run. But, Corey, here's my issue with that. I'm not moving the goalpost. I'm just saying you have the Cowboys, if the plan was the whole time that you wanted to trade him because you didn't want to invest all that money into one guy, but you wanted to spread it out, why didn't you try to get a better deal? Why didn't you do this at a time where not just me, I'm not just saying this, every NFL front office and insider person says the timing of the deal hurts the Cowboys. They did not have, Pearl, the amount of suitors, the type of desperation, the type of, you know, opportunity in front of them where a team could say, hey, this is great. I'll do this in March where I can actually, you know, you can also draft somebody who could actually help you now. The Cowboys stood up there after Micah got traded and said, we're still going to be a contending team this year because of Kenny Clark.
Well, here's the thing, though. That it was a mistake, right? But look at the Dak Prescott situation. They made a huge mistake not signing him early. And then they signed him for $60 million, and everybody said that was way too much money. So just because they screwed up in April doesn't mean that they should screw up again in August and compound a mistake by overpaying for somebody.
Well, I ask you this. Do you think that this trade still could have been there, right? Like, I forgot who it was, someone talking about this. Could you have just actually called Micah's bluff? He's not going to sit out the year. He's definitely not. And the back issue's not that bad.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And you're in the same situation next year. So he plays the fifth-year option.
Yep.
You still have the franchise tag. You can still trade him. Well, he's still going to get two first-round picks. He's only 26 years old.
It does seem like that fifth year was very, very problematic for Micah Parsons and team.
Listen, Jerry's the gambler here. Yeah. He's the risk-taker.
Well, I know. Also,
he wasn't going to sit out the whole year.
Mulugeta was talking to ESPN. Guess who's up next? He's got George Pickens on his client list.
Oh, lovely. That's going to be amazing.
And he had some interesting comments. They asked him, like, well, do you want Pickens to return to the Cowboys? He's like, well, we'll see. Oh, my God. We're going to do this all again with George Pickens if he's good, which I think both of us kind of expect now that he's going to be pretty good. I think, you know, you're looking at past mistakes and judging them on that. The truth is, let's judge it on August 30th. Is that the day the trade was made? Was it the right move? I'm still dubious. So, yeah, I think the Cowboys are going to be a lot worse without Micah Parsons. But this thing, like, Cowboys are not telling anyone they're winning the Super Bowl this year. Where'd you hear that? Did Jerry say that?
Well, Jerry said that what am I going off of here? Yes, yeah. Jerry said up there in the press conference after Micah got traded and said they were so thrilled about Kenny Clark, who on one side, that he's the defensive tackle they got from the Cowboys, from the Packers. On one side, they'll tell you how he's going to be so crucial, the linchpin of them stopping the run finally. And on the other hand, they can't wait to leak out to everybody that he's got no guaranteed money after this year because he's 30 years old with a foot injury. So don't worry, guys. It's like we actually didn't make a big commitment to him. So what is it? Is he the future cornerstone of your defense, or is he an expendable piece? Whatever.
Cowboys are clearly, there's a half rebuild going on. They're eyeing a quarterback after Dak. It's not, if they weren't Jerry Jones and talking all this bluster, we'd say, oh, okay, they're rebuilding. I mean, and by the way, it's about, I don't know, 26 years overdue.
And what do you always say about those first round draft picks? They got to be high to get a quarterback. If you're talking about statistically, where do you get the great quarterbacks?
Yeah,
it's the top 10.
They're going
to
be 5-12, though. At some point, if not this year, then next year, they are going to probably come back down to earth.
Okay, we got to break. 888-710-4ISN. Keep them coming, guys. Is there any way this is not the story of the Cowboys season? I don't know how. Like, this Micah Parsons trade doesn't just create a huge shadow. But that's me, not Cowboy fans. 888-710-4ISN. We also have some war of words going on with some college coaches, which you love to see. Is anyone pettier than two college coaches going at each other? Ah, football's so back. Maggie and Perloff Show.
Kenny Clark, get out of here.
Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff Show. The Michael, I just called him Michael. Michael Parsons.
Don't do it.
Michael Parsons. Micah Parsons controversy still swirls. There's one stat. There's so many stats on Micah that are just crazy. He has the best pressure rate in the NFL since 2021, according to Pro Football Focus, at 19.7%. He beats 1-on-1. He's absolutely unblockable. So I think you have to put a second guy on him, which will free up somebody else in Green Bay. I mean, statistically, this is a big win for Green Bay. The problem is, like, the Eagles kind of ran all over Green Bay in the playoffs last year, so they might run into the same problem the Cowboys did. What do you do when you're looking at Micah Parsons? And not only him, Edgerton Cooper, who's a killer, too, and Quay Walker, who's a killer. I think you have to run right at Green Bay the entire time. Just whatever you did to Dallas, bring it right back to Green Bay. That's my offensive strategy.
Way to go, Coach. 888-710-4ISN.
You watch. Watch this year play out. I wonder when it gets Detroit. Maybe even Ben Johnson in Chicago. They're going to see Micah Parsons. They're going to be like, well, let's not get in the third and long because that's going to be a problem.
Well, that's for sure. I love that now Parsons is just like this sieve of a guy. Like, how did he even get to become known as one of the great defensive players in the league when he has all these deficiencies? Like, if he was really that bad, like,
it's the character stuff, though. Is it really deficiencies? What are you talking about?
Well, you're talking about his, like, how one dimensional he is, but yet he was also thought of only a couple months ago to be this great defensive piece. And at some point, you have to have great players. Like, it's just, where do you want to put them? Do you want all your best players in your wide receiver room? Do you want them on your defensive line? Do you want them in your secondary? It's like, whatever your philosophy is, and the Jones family philosophy is whatever way the wind blows.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, though. I don't think all these pass rushers are built the same way. TJ Watt, Miles Garrett, Micah Parsons, Nick Bosa, they're not all the same players. Some have better against the run than others.
That's true.
Like, I don't think TJ Watt's a factor against the run, where Nick Bosa is a machine against a run. So I think that every situation is different. I think the big debate that's going to play out this year between you and me is the Micah Parsons story going to be a cloud over the Cowboys all year long, like Saquon Barkley was over the Giants next year? I understand what you're saying. It sure looks that way now, but it's a long season. The Cowboys, they always find new drama. Maybe George Pickens takes over and is the cloud. There's a lot of different things that could happen.
The storm clouds could be forming anywhere.
You know that line in Breaking Bad, I am the storm?
Yeah.
That knocks or whatever.
I'm the one who knocks.
Yeah. George Pickens could be the one who knocks, not Micah Parsons.
Oh, I'm sure they'd be thrilled with that. Big Friendly is our pal in California. Friendly, talk some sense into these Cowboy fans.
Good morning, Magsie Malone. EJ, the Bionic EP, Perloff Smirnoff. It's time to belly up to the bar, baby. And don't worry, I got enough belly for both of us. Little Big Swifty, the man who always gets the vig on time, Manny Wapo. Thank you for taking my call.
What's on your mind today?
Now, Magsie Malone, when I come to your table, I come with respect and I come with facts. And I'd like to apologize for my last phone call. It was brought to my attention. My facts were off. Now, Magsie, about this Micah Parsons trade, after my crying game shower scene, I had to understand.
Whoa.
This hate, when I seen what the Packers gave up for Micah Parsons as a mandated reporter, why has not somebody filed a claim against the Packers for elder abuse and elder manipulation? It's not right, Magsie. But the hate that Micah is getting, to you Cowboys fans, it's understandable that you guys just watched probably one of the greatest DNs in his era walk out of your door. And Magsie Malone, the problem is Jerry Jones, not Micah.
Yeah.
What did Micah do wrong, Magsie, that Dak Prescott did, that CeeDee Lamb did, that Zeke did? What did he do wrong?
What?
Didn't Zeke ask for money?
Oh, yeah.
Didn't Dak ask for money?
You want to know the difference? I'm sorry. I was waiting for the finish. The difference is that, and we found this out yesterday, again, this ESPN article that kind of had some of the details from both sides. I thought it was actually a very balanced article. Is the fact that they did this hot boxing thing with Dak Prescott, too.
Yeah.
Where Jerry Jones got Dak Prescott into a room without his agent and tried to do the whole deal. And Dak actually did agree to stuff, but he says no figures, but agreed to a structure of a contract. So Jerry was trying to do this with all the big stars.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny.
Okay, now.
But by the way, the Zeke contract was like the worst contract ever. They signed it for $50 million. They produced zero.
I understand that. But the difference between Micah Parsons and those guys, he was not willing to sell his soul on the Cowboys casting couch. That's the difference. Oh, so when Micah stood up like a man and said, listen, I'm not taking this. This is what I'm worth. This is what I'm expecting. Now, if you don't want to give it to me, there's other teams that will. And Green Bay stepped up and said, you know what? We'll give you the money. And that's where we're at. So you Cowboy fans, I understand and I can respect your animosity, but don't hate Micah. You need to start looking inwards at Jerry.
Oh, I know. But I think, Big Friendly, thank you for the call. Great call as always. I think that they have no faith in Jerry. Now, to your point, Perloff, could Jerry have backed into maybe the right move here? Because let's not forget, he thought he had a deal with Parsons.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing, I mean, listen, Big Friendly, you know I love you, but to say the problem with the Cowboys is Jerry Jones, like, yeah, no duh, Captain Obvious. Like, every we've been saying that for a decade.
Yeah, people are defending him now because it feels like Micah's taking the shrapnel.
People are saying Jerry might have tripped into a good deal. Like, tripped, like Mr. Magoo. He couldn't find the sidewalk. Nobody's saying Jerry was brilliant here. I mean, listen, the problem with the Cowboys, what's been the consistent factor since 1995? There's only been one person, two people, Steven and Jerry, who've been in that building the whole time. They're obviously the problem.
Let's get to Andrew Bogish, who's got the latest headlines for us. Sorry, the crying game thing also threw me off there with Big Bradley. I've actually never seen that movie, but I know what the plot twist is.
It was the casting couch analogy, which was perfect, that got me off.
Yeah, that one is also very dark. All right, Bogues.
Guys, good morning. Your headlines are sponsored by Prize Picks. Don't miss any of the action this football season with Prize Picks, where it's good to be right. Download Prize Picks and use code PRIMETIME and get a $50 bonus credit instantly when you play $5. Must be present in certain states. Visit prizepicks.com for restrictions and details.
Who needs Brunson?
Apparently, I need Jalen Brunson in my life because I've had enough of this.
Big spot here, trying to build on this 2-0 lead. Pitch to Grisham. Swing on, hit to left field and deep. Going back, Altuve. And it is gone! A grand slam! Another one for Trent Grisham! A 6-0 Yankee lead. That's his third slam this season.
My Instagram feed is now Dave Matthews clips, barbecue tips, Emily Ratajkowski, and Manny's sweating Trent Grisham.
Texas Trent tanks, baby. That's what I live for.
No Jennifer Aniston there? Anne Hathaway?
No. Aniston's not an Instagram player. And Hathaway, EJ can have Hathaway. I'm not going to step on that territory.
But Manny gets Trent Grisham. Thank you very much.
Dave. Yeah, Manny gets Trent Grisham. And Hathaway gets Emily Ratajkowski.
Yeah, I win. Dave Sims at the highlight there at Yankees Radio. Grisham's grand slam just getting us going, though, in Houston last night. Two pitches later, Astros lefty Framber Valdez put a fastball into the chest of his catcher, Cesar Salazar, who seemed to be expecting something off speed. So, was the cross-up just an accident, or was it on purpose because Valdez was frustrated with his catcher? Salazar did try to get him to step off before throwing that pitch to Grisham for the grand slam. Here's Valdez's answer through a translator when asked if he did it on purpose.
It was not. It was not intentional. I called for a sinker, and that's the pitch I wanted. There was a lot of noise, and I thought that was what he wanted me to throw, but no, it was not intentional.
So
that sinker sank, all right.
Yeah.
Cross-ups happen.
The old pitch calm excuse.
Yeah, cross-ups happen. I don't remember fastballs hitting catchers in the gut, and there is literally no reaction from Valdez. No, oh my God, what just happened? He throws this pitch, and he turns around and walks away as if he is angry at the catcher, which is, I think, is what's fueling everyone's suspicion that it was real.
Yeah, it was definitely on purpose.
Well, and he can't come out and be like, yeah, I meant to jack him with a 98-mile fastball. Yeah, right down the pike.
No, he can't admit it. But
they can fight later in the clubhouse, which is what they probably did, or in the parking lot, something like that.
I'd always pick the catcher, by the way, in that situation.
I don't know. Framber's on their TV right now.
Oh, he's
got some heft to him.
Yeah.
He's girthy.
Yeah, but catchers are tough.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
They're not fast. You could run away from one of them.
I feel like they're always the toughest guy on the team. I mean, look what they do. They crouch there and get hit all day. But their
knees are all messed up.
By far, pitchers and catchers are the most wild people on a baseball team.
Yeah,
definitely.
They are all like you've never met a normal pitcher or a normal catcher.
Yeah,
they're all
like
out of their
goalies.
Minds. Oh, yeah.
It's like, yeah.
Especially bullpen guys, too. Bullpen.
So
guys
much time
are
on their
insane.
Hands.
Yeah.
I thought it was definitely on purpose.
Picturing Bruce Bochy, former catcher, right? Like, nobody's beating that guy up. I don't care how old he is. Like,
not with that head.
Johnny Bench. Yeah.
Oh, Johnny Bench. Are you kidding me? His hands were the size of, I don't even know, boxing gloves without adding boxing gloves. He would kill anybody.
Joe Torre, sure, yeah.
Can you put that on the
pole? Joe Torre, he probably back in the day.
Oh, yeah, back in the 1960s, 70s. Oh, yeah.
Is there a poll question here? Like,
no. Pitchers are like Kent Tekulveen, like some of the, like, or Chris Sale. Some of them weigh 150 pounds. Like, no one thinks pitchers are.
Oh my gosh,
win these
Chris
fights.
Sale is a certified psychopath.
Well, you know, some of the attention grabbing relief pitchers, they walk they walk out of the bullpen slapping themselves in the face.
Oh, this Marlins guy's got you good.
Mm.
I mean, well, there's this new breed of gigantic relievers. Like, it used to be when I was a kid, the relievers were like stick thin. Like, they look like me. Yeah, like these Yeah, I don't know. And
yeah, but sometimes those thin guys are the craziest ones. Like, you're talking about Chris Sale. That guy took a pair of scissors and cut up everybody's uniform in the clubhouse because he didn't like the alternate jersey.
There's a catcher in the league who couldn't beat up Chris Sale. Chris Sale weighs less than you, Maggie.
I'm just saying, you got to factor in the psycho. Mm-hmm. There's like a psycho tax.
Put up the bowl.
Are those actions of a normal person?
No.
I don't like these alternate jerseys, so I'm going to grab a pair of scissors from the trainer and cut up the sleeves.
Do you think there's a single pitcher in the world who can beat up JT Realmuto? I doubt
yes.
it. That dude, are you kidding me?
There's
that
guy Framber is a Valdez. Rock.
Framber that guy Valdez, is, he would destroy Framber Valdez.
Mm.
Oh, no way.
Tywon
totally
Walker
wrong.
Would give it to JT Realmuto.
Catchers are so much tougher than pitchers.
No.
Put the poll out.
I think is it tougher, or is it who would you less want to be in a fight with? Because you're talking like Nolan Ryan,
yeah,
you know, punching Robin Ventura.
Yeah,
just
Robin
square
Ventura
in the face.
Was hardly a catcher. He was a pretty boy.
But he's another adult man that was put in a headlock by Nolan Ryan
catchers
from Texas.
Catchers are not human. They are, there's nothing. Those guys are tough. That's the toughest position to play.
Yes. Oh, yes. Catchers would probably win the overall head-to-head, but there are pitchers that could win a fight or two.
Or just who's, I think pitchers are more psychotic.
Wasn't John Rocker a pitcher?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well,
he seems kind of nuts.
Lots of issues, that dude.
I'm even thinking like a Kyle Farnsworth. Like,
oh my God.
Him,
yeah.
Farnsworth,
former Yankee.
How about this? Farnsworth ended up becoming like a football player, like a minor, some semi-pro
like
football player.
League.
Yeah, and you think, pitcher, he would be a quarterback.
Right.
Dude's a linebacker.
Yeah.
Oh. Jonathan Papelbon choked out Bryce Harper in the dugout once in Washington, D.C. You remember
Although
that?
Bryce is a pretty boy, too.
Well, I mean, but still, that's still a relief pitcher putting his hands on another man's neck.
You guys, honestly, you've all never been more wrong on a topic in your entire lives. Mm-hmm. Catchers are... Forget it. You could punch a catcher as hard as you want. It's not going to make the slightest difference. They're catchers.
Okay.
First
question.
Of all, they're
well,
wearing
they
the pads all day.
They got all the padding on.
And they have masks on.
Who's more psychotic, pitchers or catchers?
It doesn't matter who's more psychotic. Catchers are the toughest human beings on the planet.
Except
they're like
Jason
NFL
Varitek.
Centers.
Except for Jason Varitek. He decided to put his hands in A-Rod's face when he had his mask on. Tough guy.
Won that fight, though.
He did. All right. Well, that's where we got to leave it, Bo. Thank you for bringing up this very important story. But Framber Valdez possibly throwing a ball at his own catcher to send a message.
Not possibly.
Possibly, definitely. All right, coming up, did Arch Manning lose the Heisman on Saturday? Got that next. Welcome back. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff, been asking if this Micah Parsons trade is going to be a shadow over the Cowboys all season long. Also got into a conversation about who are the more psychotic and tougher baseball players. Is it pitchers or catchers?
Yeah, I am strongly in the camp of catchers. Not psychotic, but who would win in a fight? I don't know. In my mind, I guess I'm picturing the catchers still wearing masks, which makes them impossible to... Like, do they
it's
take those
of
off
advantage.
When they go home? No,
yeah.
Of course catchers are so, so much tougher.
See, I just think there's a psycho part of pitchers that makes them unpredictable and crazy. Pine Needles in our chat, youtube.com/InfinitySportsNet. Felipe Alou famously would pee all over his hands, so... I guess there's that to be considered.
Yeah, which position did he play?
Well, he played catcher.
Felipe?
Yeah.
Moises did that. I didn't know. Did Felipe do that also? I mean
maybe it was all the Alous. Who knows?
Yeah. Are you just going to, all the Alous going to be, you know?
In the
that's what I'm saying. Like,
did they pass
Moises
down?
Alou. Moises Alou was not a catcher, was he?
No, Moises was not
the one who peed all over his hands.
Yeah, he was the one that said that. I don't know if he got it from his dad.
Jorge Posada also used to go relieve himself right. on his hands.
I don't want Jorge on my catching team. Like, I don't know if he's a tough fighter, though.
Wow.
He was more of a
Jorge was crazy.
Yeah, but
Felipe was a first baseman. Was not a catcher. Pardon.
Yeah, Moises. And I don't know that Felipe did the thing on his hands. Jorge was more of a hitter, though. Like, he played catcher, but I always thought, like, oh, man, if he should be a DH. So I don't want him on my catcher team. I want a defensive-oriented catcher in these fights.
In our show group chat, I mean, I just sent a picture of Fernando Cruz, who's a reliever for the Yankees, and he nearly busted a vein because he gave up a hit, and it was just a measly single. And he was very frustrated by giving up that single. And, again, this is why relievers are psychos.
I think so, too. Rich is in California. Rich, what do you think? Who is the tougher position on the baseball field, pitchers or catchers?
I can think of a couple of pitchers that come to mind that might give a catcher everything he wanted and then some. One would be a guy by the name of Jeff Samardzija.
Dude was a
the other
wide
one
receiver.
Might be
Jeff Samardzija,
really?
That's a pretty
Samardzija
boy.
Samardzija's the first guy who comes
Shark.
To mind, not like Randy Johnson
tight end.
Or something?
No, he played receiver at Notre Dame, didn't he?
He was a tight end at Notre Dame.
I think he played, I think he was in the X or the Y. I don't think he played tight end, dude. But double check that. I remember him being a receiver. And he's a pretty boy. He's got that long flowing hair. He was big.
Yeah, he's a big boy. And then there's this guy, I think you might have heard of him, Madison Bumgarner.
Well, Bumgarner, I mean, he's the one you don't see coming, right? Because he's one of the strong silent type, Rich. You know, Madison Bumgarner will not say two words to you, rip your heart out.
Well, there was one time where somebody hit a home run into McCovey Cove and he got angry because the guy looked at it and he told him to go get the ball. I think it was Max Muncy who hit the home run.
Yeah, he's a scary man.
He is scary.
Which, Muncy or
Bumgarner?
Bumgarner. Yeah, Bumgarner. Of course.
I'm good on that guy.
He's like farm strong. You know, he's got that farm strength.
Yeah, so every catcher has farm strength.
He's
that's
a pitcher.
A catcher's.
We're talking about.
I know. I'm just saying, like, yeah, for all your Madison Bumgarners, there's five of those who play catcher. I use a tough guy, but what about like Greg Maddux? You think he's going to win a fight? There are a lot of small pitchers.
Yeah, but Greg Maddux is the professor. That's like
That's not his reputation. Right,
did you put
also,
up a
you got to be worried about your hands. You got
to
be worried about your hands if you're a pitcher more maybe than a catcher. But I would still say pitchers are. I just think they're more psycho. Chris also in Dallas wants to weigh in on the Jerry Jones, Micah Parsons. Is this going to be a cloud that hangs over the Cowboys season, Chris?
Good morning. No, I don't think this is going to be a cloud or hang over the Cowboys season because the Cowboys are bigger than Micah Parsons. To start off with Jerry's biggest flaw is that he doesn't rebuild. That's the issue we have with Jerry Jones in Dallas. Now, that being said, he didn't have to pay Micah that money. He could have kept Micah for 3 years. That's why you get a report that he had to be convinced to trade Micah Parsons.
But, Chris, that's a ton of drama. If they were going to keep him on franchise tags, he's not Dak. He would be really loud.
Okay, but here's the difference between Micah and Zeke and Dak and CeeDee Lamb that another caller brought up. Those other guys didn't sit there and try to negotiate their own contracts and then be like a little boy and be like, oh, yeah, I got to get my agent involved after I done supposedly made a deal. So to Maggie's point, why didn't he trade in March? Because Micah Parsons made his own deal in March. So there was no need to trade him. Okay. And another reason why Jared Jones had to be convinced to trade Micah, because he does have locker room issues and he would publicly speak about Trayvon Diggs' issues or this player's issues. That's the problem with Micah Parsons.
Okay,
yes,
Chris,
he's the best pass rusher in the league.
Right.
And another thing, man, I think it's kind of ironic that you take a shot at Jerry Jones by going on Good Morning America when he is the number one marketer in the NFL. He has made the NFL what it is today. Jacksonville, North Carolina. These other teams would be reveling if it wasn't for Jerry Jones creating the salary cap. And the salary cap is a real thing. All right.
I mean,
that's what we're all missing here. Cowboys and Jerry Jones. I mean,
Chris,
has a job because of Jerry Jones and how big the NFL is.
Somebody watched the documentary. Somebody watched the Netflix documentary where Jerry Jones invented football and nothing would have ever happened. Now, the NFL would have never taken off had it not been for Jerry. So you can drink a little Kool-Aid there. Listen, there's two sides to this, right? So some people will paint Micah Parsons out to be the guy who was manipulating Jerry, right? Like that he came in, he negotiated with Jerry, and then wanted more money. Here's his agent, so here's the other side. Manny Alhier, Cut 15, says the Dallas situation was unfair to Parsons. He was the one who was unqualified. Like, this is not his lane.
I think it's a bit unfair. You know, his job is to go out there and chase quarterbacks, and our job is to go out there and chase commas for him. So, I'm not sure exactly why it went this way, but, you know, we were always prepared and open to negotiate a contract with the Jones family.
All right, we got more on that. Plus, it is a little rich for Jerry, who talks to everybody at all times, to tell another, to bleak another person was, a distraction.
Can I just say, Jeff Samardzija always lined up a wide receiver, never, ever played tight end.
It's very important. I'm glad we got that in.